Friends, in this season after Pentecost, we continue to focus on God's gift of the Holy Spirit and the implications of God's gifts for the life and fellowship of his people. The Acts of the Apostles in the New Testament is the story of the church equipped with the Holy Spirit, growing in grace. It's an amazing story, really, because it all began with a relative handful of people. And they, of varying backgrounds and associations with Jesus, there were those who had spent days and weeks with him as his disciples. There were others, surely, whose contact with him during the course of his earthly ministry was much more occasional and distant. There were those, obviously, who had been aware of his crucifixion and who had heard the story of his resurrection, but they were just beginning to put together the pieces to understand what all this would mean for them in the future. And I want to pull out this morning a few things that would be part of what would be going on in their midst. Michelle read a passage from Acts chapter 2, near the beginning, speaks about the nature of the fellowship that the new group of people, not even yet called Christians, were fashioning together. The story began in Jerusalem. We know that before the account recorded in Acts is completed, it spread over a vast area, but it began where it all began, in Jerusalem. First of all, you know, there was for them a growing in their understanding of Jesus Christ. They didn't have the New Testament to read. What they did have access to, and what they shared for the most part together, were the Scriptures of the Old Testament, because most of the people in that early original community of believers had grown up in Judaism. But now they had, you see, to understand how this all fit together. How did what Jesus did and said, how did it fit with what they had been prepared to expect in terms of God's grace and a Messiah? And they had this learning to do. And it was accomplished by the simple process of people sitting down and talking. Those who had experience with Christ shared what they had experienced, what they remembered of the things that he had taught, and others listened. And no doubt, as the story unfolded, people would interject with their own observations and comments from their own experience. It was a very natural conversation which took place whenever they were able to come together, probably often at the table over a meal, or when they gathered to pray together, or when they came together to share in fellowship. The story unfolded. And they were growing in their understanding of how this all had come about. and in their understanding of what the implications of it might be for their own life as individuals and for their life as a community together. Because, you see, they had already begun to realize that they were about to become a distinct group. It wasn't that long before they found themselves separated from their Jewish roots and excluded from that earlier community of which they had been a part. And if they were going to follow this way of the Messiah in Jesus Christ, they were going to have to do it together. They were going to have to form a new community. Now, of course, it wasn't simply enough to just understand more details, to hear more stories about the life of Jesus, even to hear more stories concerning his death and resurrection, crucial as those were. What also had to happen was a deepening of their commitment to this. You know, for some, I'm sure the commitment was already established by the time of the resurrection. Some had bonded tightly with Christ. But others, you see, came into the story and into the picture a little later. And they were learning. And the next step was, all right, if all this is so, what does it mean for your life? What are you going to do? Because this is not just casual information. This is critical, life-changing information. And what are you going to do about it? Do you accept it? Do you believe that these things happen? And if you do, what does that mean? And how are you going to be linked up with this Jesus Christ who is no longer physically present in your midst? And so it was a time not only of learning by the sharing of their personal remembrances and accounts of things about Christ, but it was a time when they were deepening their commitment to this way. And the lesson that was read from Acts 2 expressed that as well, that they were beginning to demonstrate their commitment to the way of Jesus Christ. And it was quite a radical demonstration, actually, because they began to bond in community. But you know, before we look at that aspect of it, there was the matter of motive. By that I mean, what was their motive for faith? You know, sometimes people approach faith from the perspective of obligation. You know, this is what I have to do. Their approach to faith and commitment seemed rather to be based on sheer gratitude to God for the gift of his Son. And it was a response of thanksgiving. And that makes all the difference in the world, doesn't it? If you're responding to something because you must, well, you might respond, but it changes the nature and the character and the mood of your response. Whereas if you're responding to something because you are so grateful for what has been provided to you, then that makes your response warm and open and deep and generously given. Because it was clear to those early followers of Jesus Christ that God's gift of his Son had been so significant, so wonderful, that there was no other appropriate response than thanksgiving. And they began to establish a community. And that community was a strong one. It was a genuine one. Luke in Acts gives us a sense of it. They were caring for one another. They even, you know, disposed of possessions and put them in the common pot so that those who had needs could be cared for, fed. At this same time, incidentally, particularly those who were victims, those who were, in a sense, at the mercy of the community, widows and orphans were dependent upon other people providing for them. And in the Jewish community, that had been arranged for. But now, as this Christian community becomes isolated, they need to do this for themselves. And so they began establishing a community together where the bonds of fellowship were deep and tight and were provided at great personal sacrifice and on the basis of great personal commitment. All, of course, driven not by this is what we must do. But in response to God's grace, this is what we desire to do for the glory of his name. And then they also, of course, were at this time growing in the sharing of faith. Now this was happening very naturally. They didn't have to, you know, send people off to evangelism workshops. It wasn't a matter primarily of technique. It was that they were living in a community where the story of the gospel was just part of the atmosphere of every day and almost every conversation. And they not only received from that conversation, they also contributed to it. And as they did so, it became so much a natural part of who they were and what life was like for them. It wasn't as though they were somehow, setting out to preach at people. They were just talking about what life meant to them and why and how they understood life and how they saw God fitting in to their world and what God had done and was doing. And so faith was expressed in the most natural and comfortable of ways in their life together. It wasn't some, as I said, focus on technique, but they grew in grace and in sharing the faith by listening, observing, and participating. And this is a wonderful model, you know, for the Church of Jesus Christ. There they were, a handful of people. Now, sometimes, you know, we feel downcast about the state of the church in our part of the world because we see decline in numbers, at least, and we see congregations struggling. And we think we have a bit of a burden. Well, let me remind you that those who gathered as this original Christian community in Jerusalem in the first years of the faith after Pentecost, having been given the task of taking this good news into the whole world, and there they were, a veritable handful of people in comparison, no great resources to draw from, no famous people to call on for testimonies, just ordinary folk, who by the character of their life together demonstrated that this faith that they professed was genuine and real and that they meant it. And the Lord bless that. If you go back and read in Acts, it's always, to me, fascinating how when, on occasion, Luke slips in a few numbers about how this Christian community is growing, it's impressive. And yes, it was, sustained by the presence and power of the Holy Spirit. But the Holy Spirit's not absent now. I mean, in that sense, conditions are the same. And the Spirit didn't just pour out success on them. God's strategy with regard to the gifts of the Spirit, as we were considering last week, was to give gifts that could be cultivated and developed and used in such a way that the Christian community could benefit and be a benefit as those gifts were exercised. And so they too took the various gifts, material and spiritual, that God had given. They lived them out. And the Lord blessed their endeavor. And this speaks to us, you know, because here we are, we're a small group. But we have some marvelous strengths, which we may not always think about. Because in this world of bigness, you know, small is kind of looked down on, a little disparaged. Whereas one of the potentials that we have together is that we know each other. We don't have to spend time each week trying to figure out the names of the people, say, in other sections of the church. We have a beginning point, you see, for fellowship, which is real and genuine. And if we are able and willing to focus that fellowship on God's gifts in a spirit of thanksgiving, it is amazing what God can do to deepen that fellowship and to make it infectiously attractive to a hurting world. So I invite you to think about this, because this is our calling. This is a word to encourage us in the faith. It's, yes, a narrative about how the Christian church lived in its earliest days, but it is our guide and our strength. And I chose to read that passage from Matthew just to keep us in a proper perspective. Because you see, there was no place in the Christian community for arrogance, that they happened to be possessors of this wondrous news, that their faith, yes, was to be lived out visibly in the midst of their world and culture, but not in a spirit of arrogance or superiority, but in an attitude of humility and in a true spirit of grace. So, this is a story of how the church grows in grace. True then, true now. Thanks be to God.